Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 30th. Consequences key for MISD's discipline solution. Midland ISD says plans already in place to help with discipline culture. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Discipline issues inside Midland ISD will improve as principals and other officials give students consequences for their actions, district officials said this week. The Midland ISD board heard a report at its regular monthly meeting that included a comment from staff that Midland ISD stripped the right from principals to send students to DAEP, its disciplinary alternative education programs, and officials overused out-of-school suspensions. Midland ISD officials reported 1,700 out-of-school placements with an average of 3 days per suspension, which they believe impacted academic performance for those students and cost the district $310,000 in education funding. District officials also stated in its report to board members that a misalignment of board expectations and administrative policy was the reason for the procedural issues and resulting discipline problems at campuses across the district, and that policies are on the books to help with improving discipline. What's in place? The report from Midland ISD staff and ensuing board comments emphasized that teachers cannot teach and students cannot learn because of disruptive behaviors. Also, Midland ISD can ensure safe campus environments by decreasing physical altercations, fighting, mutual combat, minimizing disruptive and disrespectful behaviors to students and adults, with facilitating the development of coping skills with students. The report states that the board delegates to the principal the authority to remove a student to a DAEP, in which the student will be separated from other students for the entire school program day and will be provided instruction in the core subjects with the goal of reaching and maintaining grade level. It also states counseling will also be provided to the student. The duration of a student's placement in a DAEP will be determined on a case-by-case basis, the report stated. The report also stated a student may also be removed to DAEP for serious or persistent misbehavior. The district defines persistent to be two or more violations of the code or repeated occurrence of the same violation. Mandatory DAEP placements take place for selling, giving, delivering, possessing, using, or being under the influence of any amount of marijuana, a controlled substance, or a dangerous drug, which includes THC. Discretionary DAEP placements take place for fighting or scuffling, persistent misbehavior, which can consist of threatening or aggressive behaviors, noncompliance, and persistent classroom interruptions. Moving forward, two actions principals or others have in place are the removing the discretionary placement barrier and extending the length of placement to DAEP. To allow greater flexibility with DAEP, the district called for support at Midland Alternative Program, a DAEP program for MISD secondary schools. Those supports include prioritized recruitment and hiring, the hiring of an additional counselor, Region 18 Education Service Center supports, and professional learning sessions for staff. Midland also provided the following guidelines, opening junior high and freshman campuses at 7:45 a.m., showing a school-wide staff presence, and adhering to the commitment to address culture. Those items stressed about student infractions included, consequences would be based on seriousness of the infraction and frequency of the behavior. There would be better communication with parents and guardians. Officials would work on the timing of sending students back after an infraction. Morale was an issue when a disruptive student was sent immediately back to a class, district officials said. There would be the needed communication with teachers on consequences given to the student. In its message to parents at the end of the presentation, Midland ISD officials stated, students who display disruptive behaviors, such as fighting, cursing, or showing aggression towards staff or other students, could be removed to a disciplinary campus for a month or more. Midland ISD officials also said there are resources to help, including counselors and social workers, for students struggling with behavior issues or students impacted by other disruptive students. Also, Midland ISD will work with the Midland County District Attorney's Office on criminal consequences when applicable. Board members reacted to the presentation, saying teachers need help with disruptive students and that a better environment will help academic performance and safety issues. Odessa Hospital backs Craddock's House bill. CEO says Odessa committed to working with Midland on Regional Behavioral Health Center. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The CEO of Odessa's public hospital expressed his support for a bill authored by State Representative Tom Craddock that will create a local mental health services district to receive the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center upon completion. On Friday, the Ector County Hospital District voted to support House Bill 492, authored by the Midland Republican. Reports, including from the Texan online site, stated State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa had reservations about House Bill 492. Russell Tippin, president and CEO of Medical Center Health System, told the Reporter-Telegram he looks forward to working with officials from Midland on a needed mental health facility. The Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center received $40 million in funding in October 2021 from the state of Texas. The balance of the funds needed to complete the facility is being raised within the community, according to a release from Craddock's office. The 100-bed facility is currently in design, and it is expected to break ground this spring. The Behavioral Health Center is expected to be located between Midland and Odessa on 54 acres donated by Diamondback Energy, adjacent to the University of Texas Permian Basin's Midland campus. Quote, the current estimate of the total project cost has increased to $120 million, according to an update provided by Craddock's office. To date, the state's $40 million appropriation has been supplemented by $45 million in contributions and confirmed pledges, leaving a balance of about $35 million to be raised locally. While fundraising efforts are still underway, indications are that sufficient local philanthropic support will be available to fully fund the project. House Bill 492 has been unanimously voted out of the House Committee on County Affairs. Tippin said that one message about the support Medical Center Health System officials have offered in Austin, and again with the vote last week, was that both hospital districts want to do what's best for Midland and Ector counties and the rest of the Permian Basin. Tippin emphasized this will be a regional facility. That sentiment was confirmed by a new funding request announced for a 100-bed expansion and annual operating cost support from the state of Texas. Quote, a proposed expansion would bring the total to 200 beds and would be comprised of a combination of acute child or adolescent beds and competency restoration rooms, according to the update. The capital funding request includes $65 million for the 100-bed expansion, $10 million for infrastructure planning, design, and construction to the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center site, and $11 million in startup funding for PBBHC workforce. Quote, every year, we and Midland do a community needs assessment, and behavioral health in juveniles and adults is the biggest need identified every year, Tippin said. Medical center officials added that a behavioral health center should keep those having breakdowns out of the local emergency rooms and into a more appropriate place to receive care. Tippin added that the center will help treat the patient and prepare a patient's family and support system. The medical center CEO added that this joint venture between Medical Center Health System and Midland Health has never been done previously. He looked forward to showing that competing hospitals could work together to serve the entire Permian Basin. Quote, the state is watching us, Tippin said. This is a first big step for Odessa and Midland. Even though we compete against each other, we also can come together and do something awesome, end quote. Small Bites. Three new restaurants open for business. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. El Vaquero Tacos y Montados. Although the food truck has been operating throughout West Texas for a little more than 2 years, the Tall City became the restaurant's official home earlier this year. In English, El Vaquero means the cowboy, and what better to call a group of foodies who supply some of the most flavorful, punchy, spicy meat and cheese-packed foods and the 432. Serving tacos and montados, similar to a quesadilla, patrons can enjoy a multitude of menu choices. Tacos de birria, four hard with mozzarella, onion, cilantro, cup of consomme. Tacos de asada, five soft with onions, cilantro, tomatoes, cucumbers. Tacos El Pastor, five soft with onions and cilantro. Montado de birria, with onion, cilantro. Montado de asada, with grilled onion, tomatoes, cucumber, cilantro. And gringa, El Pastor quesadilla, with onion, cilantro, tomatoes. The real kicker comes from the food truck's ramen option, both mouth-watering and delicious. El Vaquero also offers family meals and does catering. It can be found in the parking lot of Office Depot, 2326 West Loop 250 North. Operational hours seem to change weekly, but can be found 5 to 10 p.m. Friday and 1 to 9 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Frynatics. After a lucrative soft opening at the Buffalo Nickel last week, this potato-focused food truck stays rolling around town, serving crave-filling loaded fries to all. 10 delectable creations make up the Frynatics menu, and all can be ordered in either half or full helpings. Barbecue Brisket offers smoked brisket ends, barbecue sauce, cheddar cheese, and pickled red onions, while the burger-styled fries come with ground beef, tomatoes, queso, pickles, lettuce, onions, cheddar cheese, and comeback sauce. The classic is made up of queso, bacon, green onions, cheddar cheese, avocado, cream sauce, and a side of ranch. Somewhat calmer options include the buffalo, chicken, buffalo sauce, blue dill ranch, celery, truffle, truffle oil, parm, parsley, chili cheese, signature beef chili, cheddar, jalapenos, lunatic, half order with two chicken strips, queso fries, and just fries, whole pound. However, Fridays takes the cake, coming with three scoops of vanilla ice cream, caramel drizzle, chopped chocolate, and toasted candied pecans. Days and hours change, so follow Frynatics on social media to stay up to date. This week, find them from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Buffalo Nickel on Thursday and Friday. Szechuan House. A repeat-packed parking lot and consistent raving reviews online prove the Asian fusion restaurant successfully made its debut in the Midland community and will probably be around for a while. So, why not join the fun and try one of Szechuan House's 124 menu items? Yeah, I'm not exaggerating. 25 appetizers, 5 soups, 22 chicken or duck entrees, 16 beef or lamb, 10 pork, 6 fish, 16 vegetable, 14 seafood, and 10 rice or noodle-based dishes. If your picky eater can't be satisfied with this many choices, you probably should just leave them at home. Some fully loaded starters include pan-fried or steamed dumplings, crab rangoons, Szechuan-styled cold jelly, and scallion pancakes. An acquired taste, I recommend pairing with either a very sweet, tangy, or spicy sauce. More-than-you-can-eat meals range from small Peking duck and sesame chicken to spicy dry-spot flounder fillet and sautéed fried lobster with fried noodles. Szechuan House can be found at 4501 West Wadley Avenue. Current lunch hours run 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Dinner hours run from 4:30 to 9:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and from 4:30 to 10:30 p.m. Friday. Saturday hours are 11 a.m. to 10:30 p.m., and Sunday hours are 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. To order online, visit SzechuanHouseMidland.com. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, March 30th. Glenn Luff, age 93, of Midland, passed away on March 23rd. A visitation will take place at 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Sunday, April 2nd, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, Monday, April 3rd, at South Park Cemetery in Roswell, New Mexico. Glenn Charles Luff was born on June 16, 1929, in Montgomery, Minnesota, to Andrew and Elsie Luff. He was the third son of four brothers, Gene, Don, and Ken. Glenn met Helen DeBoard in 1964, and they were married in January 1965. Glenn was a petroleum geologist for Atlantic Richfield Company, ARCO, for 22 years. The next 10 years were with A.G. Hill, Dallas Independent, Ammon Oil, and Coastal Oil and Gas, all in Midland. His final career was consulting with oil companies until 2014. He had two children, Susan and David Luff, with his first wife, Ann Spruill. After marrying Helen, Glenn became a stepfather to Susan DeBoard. Glenn Luff is survived by daughter Susan Luff Critton and her husband Rand, David Luff and his wife Deborah, Susan Henderson and husband Bob, and brothers Gene and Ken. He is also survived by several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com or directly to his daughter, Susan Critton, at gmail.com. Patricia Yvonne Spaugh passed away on February 28th, surrounded by her family. She was 87 years old. Pat was born on September 16, 1935, to Bruno and Hilda Coupot on the family farm in Sagerton, Texas. She graduated from Rural High School in 1953. After graduation, Pat moved to Midland, Texas, and worked at Shell Oil Company. She met B.H. Spaugh, Jr. in January of 1956. They were married on March 19th. It was a whirlwind romance that lasted 63 years until his death in 2019. Shortly after marrying B.H., they moved to a ranch in Fort Stockton. They moved back to Midland in 1969. Pat started working at First National Bank until its closure, and then worked for the FDIC. Later in life, she worked at Anita Goudreau Designs. Pat is survived by her daughters Sheila Schoolcraft, Shara Wright, and Deanne Edwards, all of Midland. She is also survived by several grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her beloved husband, B.H., her parents, and her siblings. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, April 1st at 1 p.m. at First Christian Church, 1301 West Louisiana in Midland. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests that donations be made to First Christian Church Food Pantry at the address above or to Hospice of Midland at 911 West Texas Avenue in Midland. Robert Emmett Poor, better known as Bob Poor, died on February 22nd in Granbury. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, April 1st, at the Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity in Midland at 11 a.m. Bob was born and reared in Pecos, Texas, and was named after his two grandfathers, William Emmett Poor and Robert Elmer Johnson. He began the study of piano at age 7, which initiated his passion for music. He graduated from Pecos High School in 1954 and entered Texas Christian University. In 1957, he married his childhood sweetheart, Carolyn Pate, whom he met in the first grade. In 1958, they both graduated from TCU. Bob graduated with a Bachelor's of Music degree in organ performance. His career as a church organist spanned over 60 years, beginning in 1958. He served as organist, choir master in churches in Breckenridge and Dallas, Texas. He moved his young family to Midland in 1969, where he served at First Presbyterian, Holy Trinity, Memorial Christian, and St. Anne's. The love of his life, Carolyn, preceded him in death in 2016. Bob is survived by his three children, Lisa Drummond of Durham, North Carolina, Beth Clark of Granbury, Evan Poor of Saginaw. He's also survived by several grandchildren and by his sister, Roseanne Emmon. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that contributions be made to Interim Healthcare and Hospice of Granbury, 1314 Palexi Road, Granbury, Texas, 76048, or Holy Trinity Episcopal Church, 1412 West Illinois Avenue in Midland. Mary Lee Huckabaugh, age 87, of Midland, passed away on March 28th. The family will receive guests from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, April 2nd, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, April 3rd, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Resthaven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for Thursday, March 30th, 2023. Bright Star, the result of a collaborative effort by Michael Bauer, M. Bauer at OAOA.com. The end result of a unique collaboration will take the stage in April at Ector Theater in the musical production of Bright Star. The musical is April 27th through 29th at the Ector Theater, and tickets can be purchased online at theector.com. This production is being put together by Odessa College, Basin Theater Works, and Odessa Arts, and is the first collaboration of its kind. A news conference was held Wednesday at the Ector Theater to not only help promote the musical, but also shine a light on the work all three organizations have done to work together on this. Basin Theater Works Executive Director John Montgomery talks about the upcoming production of Bright Star Wednesday at Ector County Theater. Chair of Visual and Performing Arts at Odessa College, Eric Baker, talks about the upcoming production of Bright Star Wednesday at Ector Theater. The production is a collaboration between Odessa College, Basin Theater Works, and Odessa Arts. Bright Star is a 2016 Tony Award-nominated Best Musical that was written and composed by Steve Martin and Edie Brickell. It is set in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina in the 1940s with flashbacks to 1923. The director is Odessa College Director of Theater, Josh Rapp. "It's kind of a wild ride," Rapp said of the collaboration. "This play's been on my brain for a long time. It's been on my brain for a long time. I've been waiting for the right time to do it. The show's been very special to me. I come from Appalachia, so it's connected to me in both music, story, and narrative. It's never felt like the right time to direct it until I got here and had a sense of new community. I got to meet Executive Director of Basin Theater Works, John Montgomery, and Odessa Arts Executive Director, Randy Hamm, and we had a good conversation about wanting to do something together. Bright Star is an American folk tale that's inspired by a true story. It tells a moving tale of love and redemption against the backdrop of the American South in the 1920s and 1940s. This show, both in narrative and musically, gives us a sense of community but also collaboration," Rapp said. "When we had the opportunity to work on something, I tried as calmly as possible to bring this show here, and they all read it and liked it, and we wanted to create something unique in the area. This is the first collaboration, to my knowledge, between all three partnerships. This has never happened before, and definitely not on this scale. The cast exhibits that, as the production features Odessa College students, but also community members from all over West Texas, including outside of Odessa. It's really a melting pot of talent, and we're all really excited about the project," Rapp said. "We decided the best place to do this show was in downtown Odessa at Ector Theater. Montgomery moved to Odessa this past fall, and immediately the project was brought to him as a potential collaboration. I was excited because it kick-started the love of the community for me," Montgomery said. "Already, out of the gate, we're talking about working together, all of the different arts groups. That got me excited about coming to Odessa and the job ahead of us and where we want to go in the future. We all understand from everyone that working together makes us stronger. Montgomery also said that diversifying the audiences and bringing our audience members together to experience really cool storytelling enhances our empathy and sympathy for one another. That'll be no different with this production, and Montgomery said they're excited for future collaborations. This won't be our last, Montgomery said. It's such a great story to tell. This music is unique and it has great concert content. The storytelling is great. We're excited to be participating in this. Working on the music side, Chair of Visual and Performing Arts at Odessa College, Eric Baker, also talked about the production, saying that there's a band of at least 11 instrumentalists involved in the musical production. Most of those members are local, taking from our community, Baker said. Some are string players from the West Texas Symphony, but we have a banjo, fiddle, and mandolin, and those three players are all coming from the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Those guys are professional players in their own right, and we're bringing them in as part of what is called the Music Master Series at Odessa College. It's going to be an even bigger collaboration there. Rehearsals began back in January. Baker also talked about what this musical collaboration says about the arts in Odessa as well as downtown Odessa. As you know, for many years, there's been a great initiative to redevelop and redesign downtown Odessa, Baker said. We have the Odessa Theater and the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. All of this comes together when Odessa Arts works very hard in the city to fund nonprofits to give opportunities for our community. That trickles down to Odessa College and Basin Theater Works. Then we thought, why don't we use our resources to do more than what we can do individually? When everyone comes together, there's a great yield and a better return. It just demonstrates that family relationship that we all have in the arts. For more information about the show, go to theector.com. New Digs, 8.3 million animal shelter opening April 11th. A large crowd gathered Wednesday for a tour and ribbon-cutting ceremony for the city of Odessa's new 8.3 million animal services facility. Mayor Javier Hoven, Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke, and Interim Chief Manager Agapito Bernal spoke about the new state-of-the-art facility, which will open April 11th and replace the city's 30-year-old facility, which will close permanently today. The facility doubles the number of kennels currently available to house cats and dogs to 231, improves the ventilation system to lessen the likelihood of diseases spreading, and provides an enhanced drainage system. City officials have said the additional kennels should aid in decreasing the number of pets that are euthanized annually for other reasons aside from illness. According to records obtained from the city under the Texas Public Information Act, just over 6,700 cats and dogs were euthanized from 2019 to 2021, Hoven told the crowd. The new facility is the first step in addressing the city's animal population issues. But the community needs to step up and spay and neuter their pets. Bernal, who began his public service career in animal control, called Wednesday a wow moment. He noted how people treat their animals says a lot about the community. Hoven, Gerke, and Bernal gave their thanks to community volunteers, animal rescue groups, advisory board members, city staff, and councils, past and present, for their devotion to the communities, animals, and the new facility. ED Foundation to offer Parent Academy. The Education Foundation has a lot going on. It has gained two parent community engagement specialists, plans to host a Parent Academy and offer more community events. What we've been doing is researching and trying to identify the best ways to better engage our parents in the community. We went to a training in Frisco in December, and an idea was shared by another school district for a parent leadership academy. So we're going to move forward with that and introduce it in the fall, Foundation Director Celeste Potter said. It is a semester-long program that empowers parents to advocate for their child, themselves, and their families. It will be free for parents to participate in. There will be certain courses that they have to complete to graduate from the program at the end of the semester. On top of that, we're going to offer optional courses for them to attend that will be open to any parent in the district, Potter said. The hope is that parents can start signing up in June. The first program would start in September after Labor Day and finish in December. Some of the courses that will be offered will be navigating the school system, strengthening academic success outside of the classroom, and understanding their role in the community as a parent, parenting in the digital age, and bridging the math gap between school and home. Other possibilities are 6 ways to support your child's literacy development and pathways to adulthood, helping parents understand how they can prepare their students for leaving home. The foundation is hoping to partner with the nonprofits like Junior Achievement and West Texas Food Bank that provide these types of services. We're even hoping we can partner with Odessa College and UT Permian Basin to offer some college tours just so that the parents and their students can start getting on those campuses and getting familiar with them, Potter said. When the foundation got the 2 parent community engagement specialist, Potter said they felt like they got off to a slow start because they had to research what they could do and find the right fit for the community. We've already talked to the Odessa College. We've already talked to some representatives from the university who are all excited about how they can help. Hopefully, this will be a new resource that our district provides to their families on a regular basis. Then, kind of copying off the Odessa Chamber of Commerce's Leadership Odessa, using the first parents who graduate from that class as people who help us with the following course, Potter said. The Education Foundation is having a fundraiser at 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Ector Theater. It will feature Grammy Award-winning songwriters Liz Rose, Lori McKenna, and Phil Barton. They will offer an evening of storytelling and some performing. Potter said there also are plans to build a reading garden in back of the development office. They are hoping to have a big unveil this summer. I'm working with ECISD horticulture students. They're actually going to do the plants, and then some art students at Crockett Middle School are going to be taking bricks and making them look like books. There will be a place that will be opened during the day. We've got a lot of students from OHS during their lunch hour. They're just hanging around and provide a nice, safe place for them to hang out and also beautify the neighborhood. We've been working with a local artist to do a mural back there, Potter said. We're hoping in the 23-24 school year, we'll be able to do a lot more community type events. We've even talked about working with some food trucks to have food truck Fridays or something out here where we can bring people to our offices, where we can share information about who we are, what we do, and how people can help, because we do have a lot of volunteer opportunities, a lot of partner opportunities. We're just trying to think of creative ways to gather people, Potter said. Boaters, anglers encouraged to stay clear of coastal rookeries. OA News at OAOA.com, Austin. With peak boating season around the corner, Texans recreating on the coast are likely to spot iconic coastal birds such as brown pelicans, rosette spoonbills, black skimmers, and reddish egrets nesting in dense colonies called rookeries. These rookeries provide breeding homes and nurseries for thousands of birds and other species on barrier and smaller islands in Texas bays. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, TPWD, encourages Texas boaters and anglers to watch out for these nesting birds while on the coast so they aren't disturbed during this sensitive time. With too many disturbances, an entire colony of thousands of birds may abandon an island and give up on breeding for the year, which can potentially lead to drastic population declines, Trey Barron, a diversity biologist with TPWD, said in a news release. When approached too closely by boaters or people waiting nearby, birds are frightened off their nests, leaving eggs and chicks exposed to the summer sun, which can cause them to overheat. The abandoned nests also allow opportunistic predators like gulls and grackles to quickly swoop in and feed on them. Colonial nesting water birds whose nests, eggs, and chicks are protected under the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act and by Texas Parks and Wildlife Code typically nest from late February through August. The tiny nesting islands include spoil islands, may only appear to be large sandbars. This puts the birds at a greater risk of encountering coastal anglers, boaters, bird watchers, and wildlife photographers, among others. More than half of the 25 species of colonial nesting water birds in Texas are experiencing major population declines. These birds and their habitats are valuable to Texas. Black skimmers, the species featured on the logo of the TPWD, Great Texas Coastal Birding Trail signage, have declined about 70% since record keeping began with Texas Colonial Water Bird Surveys in 1973. The reddish egret, a state-threatened species with more nests in Texas than most almost anywhere, attracts birders from all over the world. The Texas Colonial Water Bird Society, a large partnership of federal and state agencies, universities, and nonprofit organizations, recommends that people fish, swim, and play at least 50 yards from rookery islands to minimize unintentional and potentially illegal disturbances. While the nesting islands are often attractive spots for kayakers and other boaters, it's important for humans and other pets to keep a safe and respectable distance. In addition to avoiding rookery islands during the nesting season, it's recommended that boaters and anglers properly dispose of fishing line, tackle, and other waste to ensure that no birds, turtles, or other marine life become entangled, injured, or killed. The habitats that water birds use are the same habitats in which we, including myself, enjoy fishing, hunting, and photographing wildlife. Barron said in the release, "We just have to remember to give them their space, especially during the nesting season, and pick up after ourselves. If you're out on the water, look for the yellow signs that identify rookery islands and keep your distance. We can all enjoy the same places as long as we do it responsibly." For more information, visit tinyurl.com/4u5drzy3. Elephant in Dining Room. Startup makes mammoth meatball. The Associated Press, Amsterdam. Throw another mammoth on the Barbie. An Australian company on Tuesday lifted the glass cloche on a meatball made of lab-grown cultured meat using the genetic sequence from the long-extinct pachyderm, saying it was meant to fire up public debate about the high-tech treat. The launch in an Amsterdam science museum came just days before April 1st, so there was an elephant in the room. Is it for real? This is not an April Fool's joke, said Tim Noakesmith, founder of Australian startup Vow. This is a real innovation. Cultivated meat, also called cultured or cell-based meat, is made from animal cells. Livestock doesn't need to be killed to produce it, which advocates say is better not just for the animals, but also for the environment. Vow used publicly available genetic information from the mammoth, filled missing parts with genetic data from its closest living relative, the African elephant, and inserted it into a sheep cell, Noakesmith said. Given the right conditions in a lab, the cells multiplied until there were enough to roll up into the meatball. More than 100 companies around the world are working on cultivated meat products, many of them startups like Vow. Experts say that if the technology is widely adopted, it could vastly reduce the environmental impact of global meat production in the future. Currently, billions of acres of land are used for agriculture worldwide. But don't expect this to land on plates around the world anytime soon. So far, tiny Singapore is the only country to have approved cell-based meat for consumption. Vow is hoping to sell its first-time product there, a cultivated Japanese quail meat, later this year. The Mammoth Meatball is a one-off and has not been tasted, even by its creators, nor is it planned to be put into commercial production. Instead, it was presented as a source of protein that would get people talking about the future of meat. Midland Health Wound Management Center recognized. Midland Health has announced that the Midland Health Wound Management Center is a recipient of the Center of Distinction Award by Healogix, the nation's largest provider of advanced wound care services. The center achieved outstanding clinical outcomes for 12 consecutive months, including a patient satisfaction rate higher than 92%. Every day, Dr. Melissa Allworth and our team strive to serve our patients with the best quality of care possible, said Brad Robinson, Wound Management Center Program Director. We are excited to be a center of distinction and be a part of leading healthcare for Greater Midland. The Wound Management Center is a member of the Healogix network of more than 600 wound care centers and offers highly specialized wound care to patients suffering from diabetic foot ulcers, pressure ulcers, infections, and other chronic wounds which have not healed in a reasonable amount of time. Advanced wound care modalities provided by wound care experts include negative pressure wound therapy, total contact casting, bioengineered tissues, biosynthetic dressings, and growth factor therapies. The center also offers hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which works by surrounding the patient with 100% oxygen to help progress the healing of the wound. By Midland Health. Parton Brooks to host ACM Awards. The Associated Press, Nashville, Tennessee. Dolly Parton will return for a second consecutive year as host of the Academy of Country Music Awards, but this year she's bringing a new plus one to help, Garth Brooks. The show is set for May 11th and will stream live on Amazon Prime Video from Ford Center at the Star in Frisco. A full rebroadcast of the ceremony and performances will stream the next day for free on Amazon Freevee. It's the second consecutive year that the show will be hosted by Parton, but marks the first time Brooks will take the stage to host an awards show. I am thrilled to return to host the ACM Awards, this time with my friend Garth, said Parton in a statement. While I've had the pleasure of spending time with him throughout the years, I can't believe we've never had a chance to work together. Anyone with Dolly Parton makes a fantastic couple, added Brooks. Wreck results in fatality. A four-vehicle wreck resulted in the death of a motorcyclist Tuesday night and injuries to two other cyclists. According to an Odessa Police Department news release, a woman driving a Nissan Altima failed to yield motorcyclist while turning left onto Governor Preston Smith from westbound 42nd Street shortly before 8 p.m. Severo Nunez, who was riding a Kawasaki Ninja, collided with the Altima, as did another motorcyclist, and a third motorcyclist laid down his bike, according to OPD. Nunez was pronounced dead at Medical Center Hospital. The second motorcyclist suffered serious bodily injuries, and the third was treated at the scene and released. An investigation is ongoing. Odessan, who was shot to death, identified by Kim Smith. An Odessa man who was shot to death Tuesday has been identified as Aaron Fuentes, 21. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths and Sebastian Jaden Ocon, 19, has been booked into Ector County Jail on a murder charge. His bond has been set at $750,000. Deputies received a shots fired call around 5:30 p.m. Tuesday from a small trailer park on West Westridge Drive and North Cypress Avenue. When they arrived, they found Fuentes deceased in a driveway. They found Ocon on foot around the corner from the scene and took him into custody without incident, Griffiths said. According to Ector County District Court records, Ocon was placed on 2 years deferred adjudication in January after pleading guilty to a March 2021 injury to a child charge and a September 2022 evading arrest with a vehicle charge. At that time, Okan signed a document informing him he was no longer allowed to possess a firearm or ammunition. Traffic chief turns in resignation. The city of Odessa is losing another longtime employee. Hal Feldman, traffic operations superintendent, turned in his resignation papers Tuesday afternoon, Odessa City Council member Steve Thompson confirmed. Feldman will be taking a job in Tucson after finishing up his last 2 weeks, Thompson said, adding Feldman had been with the city for more than 20 years. Feldman's decision comes on the heels of Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton's unexpected retirement Monday. More than a dozen city employees have retired since November, including Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy, Odessa Fire Chief John Alvarez, OFR Assistant Chiefs Rod Huber, and Saul Ortega, Director of Development Randy Brinley, and OFR Training Chief Martin Moya. OFR Assistant Chief Joey White retired in September. Since the City Council voted 5-2 to terminate City Manager Michael Marrero and City Attorney Natasha Brooks on December the 13th, the city has also lost three of its five city attorneys and Randy Pineda, who spent 21 years as the assistant to the city manager. In addition to the city, also fired Assistant City Manager Aaron Smith earlier this month. Feldman did not respond to a voicemail and text seeking a comment. Interim City Manager Agapito Bernal, Mayor Javier Hoven, and Council Members Mark Mata, Denise Swanner, Chris Haney, and Greg Connell did not immediately respond to a text or email either. Council members Gilbert Vasquez and Thompson both expressed dismay at the number of long-term people who have left this city in recent months, noting the city has lost a lot of experience and knowledge. MCH being sued by recruitment firm. A nurse recruitment firm has filed a breach of contract lawsuit against Medical Center Hospital, alleging the hospital wrongfully tried to alter recruitment incentives and owes them $1,875,000. According to the lawsuit filed last week in Ector County District Court, the hospital hired NCI Nursing Solutions of Pennsylvania in April 2022 to qualify, interview, and schedule candidates for on-site interviews and to pay employees a recruitment transition incentive from NSI revenues received from the hospital. Such incentives, the lawsuit states, were to be determined by NSI. NSI extends offers to 52 candidates and 36 of them were hired, the lawsuit stated. According to the lawsuit, after the candidates were hired, the hospital demanded NSI alter the recruitment incentive because MCH wanted the candidates to commit to no less than 24 months of employment at MCH. NCI refused to engage in the bait-and-switch tactic, and as a result, NCI was prevented from earning an additional $340,000 in fees, the lawsuit stated. In addition, the hospital's outstanding balance is $1,875,000, the lawsuit stated. NSI is seeking damages, attorney's fees, the cost of the lawsuit, and interest. Trevor Tankersley, Director of Public Relations for MCH, said, "Although MCH has not been served with this lawsuit, we can't comment on any pending or future litigation." Brain fog lingers after using general anesthesia. Dear Dr. Roach, would you please explain the pros and cons of general versus spinal anesthetic? I have had 3 bladder tumor resection operations with general anesthetic in the past 2 years and have suffered the consequences of anesthetic fog, which is sometimes very disturbing and inconvenient. I am 82 and I'm worried about how much memory has been lost, misplaced. If further surgeries are required, would you recommend or insist on a spinal anesthetic? DG. Answer. This is certainly a discussion to have with your anesthesiologist, who has far more expertise than I do in this matter. However, there are studies that show spinal anesthesia has a lower rate of post-operative effects on thinking than general anesthesia does, at least in people who, like you, were undergoing bladder procedures. A large review of all trials on confusion and delirium after surgery did not show a major difference between general anesthesia and regional anesthesia like spinal, but there was a trend towards spinal being better. The most important factor in choosing anesthesia is your overall safety and the type of surgery taking place. Your medical characteristics need to be taken into account. I would never insist on one type of surgery or anesthesia. You need to trust both your surgeon and your anesthesiologist to act in your best interest, since they have more expertise than I do. Still, explaining to your anesthesiologist your concern about fog after anesthesia can help them plan the anesthesia that is least likely to cause this problem. That may indeed be spinal or other regional anesthesia rather than general. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida 32853-6475.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, March 30th. Boyfriend issues ultimatum to girlfriend and her son. Dear Abby, my boyfriend of 3 years wants me to move in with him. He's a great guy. He's loving and affectionate, kind and caring. We want the same thing for our kids and have quite a few things in common. We enjoy playing sports, and we're both foodies. He checks a lot of my boxes, so I know I'm ready for marriage. We both have kids. He has a 10-year-old girl. I have a 4-year-old boy. He has asked me multiple times to move in with him, but I'd like to be engaged or married before doing so. He wants us to live together first, because my relationship with his daughter hasn't flourished. He'd also like to build a trusting relationship with my son, which I understand and find equally important. He says we must live together before he proposes to me, because we need to work on our finances and careers, etc. He has now given me an ultimatum: either I move in or he moves on. What am I to do? Am I asking for too much? Signed, Coerced in Florida. Dear Coerced, I don't think it's too much to want a commitment from your loving, affectionate, rigid, and controlling boyfriend before moving in with him. Move in or I'm dumping you doesn't seem particularly loving to me. It seems more like emotional blackmail. Tell him you have concerns because your relationship with his daughter, after 3 years, hasn't flourished. Does she live with him? Things won't improve if your presence is forced on her. From where I sit, it appears he wants to try you on for size with absolutely no commitment on his part. If you do what he's demanding, there is no guarantee he will ever propose marriage. Move on. Dear Abby, I'm a retired married man. My sister, who is 4 years younger, was recently widowed. She was married for a long time to an abusive alcoholic who eventually drank himself to death. Sometime later, she married a friend of hers who I suspect was also abusive. He died a year ago, leaving her with almost nothing. Because of differences in our political and spiritual beliefs, my sister and I are not close. She tends to be very defensive in conversation and emails. However, my wife and I have been thinking we'd like to give her something monetarily so she could be more comfortable. It wouldn't be a single gift on our part or a large amount. We feel it would be best if given on a weekly or monthly basis. How should I approach my sister about it? There will be no strings attached, just a regularly given amount to do with however she wants. Any thoughts you have would be greatly appreciated. Signed, Not Close, but caring. Dear, not close. You are caring, thoughtful, and generous. It is a shame that political differences have driven a wedge between you and your sister. Because she tends to be defensive when the two of you make contact, ask your attorney to write her a letter explaining that you and your wife are doing some estate planning and you wish to give her a certain sum of money each week or month to use as she wishes. If she's interested, she should contact the attorney so the arrangements can be made.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.